Hello and welcome to Four Corners, a closer look at one of the stories shaping your world. I'm Shahab Mossavat at Press TV Centre in Tehran. Credibility is a commodity in short supply in the Middle East. The Palestinian question is such a politically poisoned chalice that President Bush has refused for the majority of the time since he came to the White House in 2001 to drink from it. Since then, so many other issues have joined the agenda that the Middle East and not only the Israeli-Palestinian conflict can be ignored any longer.
There are few expectations the Annapolis Peace Conference will produce anything concrete. More than 40 countries, including Saudi Arabia and Syria, which do not have diplomatic relations with Israel, are attending the conference. Israeli and Palestinian delegations agree it is what happens after Annapolis that is crucial to the peace process. Various demonstrations took place across the world. A noisy group of demonstrators gathered at Lafayette Park across from the White House on Sunday to protest against Israel making concessions during any negotiations. More demonstrations are scheduled to take place in coming days, both in Washington and Annapolis. Israeli settlers held a rally in Jerusalem on Sunday, calling on governments not to concede the division of Jerusalem. Meanwhile, supporters of Hamas gathered to demonstrate against the validity of the peace process that excludes their leaders.
We're crossing over by phone to Press TV's own correspondent in Gaza, Youssef El Halou. Hi, Youssef. A lot of activity in Gaza today. Big demonstrations against the meeting in Annapolis. Who's been taking part in these? No, it seems that we don't have Youssef El Halou in Gaza at the moment. Now, with the end of his presidency a little more than a year away, Mr. Bush seems determined in much the same way as his predecessor to make his mark in history. However, rather than go down as a man who brought a cycle of war to the region, Annapolis has been designed to give him a platform from which to promote the Pax Americana. In attendance are representatives of more than 40 nations and organizations. Mr. Bush has been less ebullient than he usually is in the run-up to such occasions, and to dampen expectations has hailed Annapolis a preliminary to further negotiations. So, what does Annapolis hold in store? Who is there and who isn't? And what of the future beyond Annapolis? I'd like to welcome to Four Corners Viktor Nadeyn-Raevsky, political analyst for the Voice of Russia and an advisor on the Islamic world to the Supreme Council of Russia, Dr. Asad Abu Sharekh, who is a well-respected thinker and intellectual. He's also a professor at Al-Azhar University, who joins us from Gaza, and Eric Warburg, a journalist and specialist in international affairs at the Egyptian weekly Al-Ahram. And on the phone from Florida, we're hoping to be joined by Joe Shea. Joe Shea is editor-in-chief of The American Reporter, an online journal that has established a reputation since its founding in 1995 for hard-hitting journalism. Welcome to you all. Dr. Sharekh, are you there? It seems we don't have Dr. Sharekh at the moment. I'm going to go to Mr. Warburg in Cairo. Mr. Warburg, welcome to Four Corners. What's the purpose of Annapolis? Mr. Warburg? Do you have my voice? It seems we don't have Mr. Wahlberg either. Now, Annapolis has been hailed as the moment in which America is going to coalesce all of the warring factions in the Middle East, bring them together and knock some heads together. In attendance are, amongst others, Palestinians as well as Israelis, and the heads of many of the other Arab nations in the region. Most notably amongst those is the Saudi foreign minister, Saud al-Faisal. Mr. Faisal, or Sheikh Faisal, has said that what he doesn't want to see emerging from Annapolis is an Arab version of Versailles. What does he mean by that? He elaborated to Time magazine earlier this month that what he wants to prevent is a continuing cycle of war. Now, I think we are going to be joined on the line by our guest in Moscow, and that is Viktor Nadane-Raevsky. Mr. Nadane-Raevsky, welcome to Four Corners. I'd like to begin by asking, what's the purpose of Annapolis?
Well, as for the purpose of Annapolis, it was said that this is just an attempt to resume the negotiations between the Palestinian side and the Israeli side, and in order just to promote the process of Middle East resolution. Well, but this is of course official purpose. If to speak about some other hidden motives, some ideas that both sides try just to contribute in the process, each side has its own purposes. As for the United States, of course, I can understand their move. Maybe they are trying just to do something, obviously, just to promote the process. But in fact, it seems to me to a great deal, of course, it is an attempt of Mr. President Bush to enter the annals of history as a peacekeeper, as a person who finishes
Mr. Nadane-Raevsky,
yes.
The annals of history are filled with failures and with catastrophes, and Prince Saud al-Faisal, who I quoted from his interview with Time magazine, said that the Arabs are anxious that this is not the Arab version of Versailles, an agreement or a peace process that ends in an agreement that leads to a continuing cycle of war. Given the background, how likely is it that there will be peace accords signed that will have lasting effects?
Well, you see, as for the end of the war, as for the end of the conflict, it seems to me it's too early to speak about this. This is only an attempt to speak to each other. But the better was the attempt if, for example, other sections of Palestinian movement were also involved into the process. But as we understand, only the West Bank is on the talks. As for the Hamas and other movements and trends in Palestinian movement are not involved. It seems to me it's no good for the final solution.
No, I hear that.
Anyhow.
I want to turn to Joe Shea. Joe Shea, I think, is joining us on the telephone from Florida. He is the editor-in-chief of The American Reporter, the online magazine that I referred to earlier. Joe Shea, very welcome to Four Corners. Good evening.
It's a pleasure to be talking to you.
I want to ask you how discredited this meeting is. The people that are in attendance don't have a great deal of domestic support. President Bush obviously is a Democrat. He's democratically elected, and obviously the cycle of democracy proves that some people won't be popular for such long periods. But how about President Mahmoud Abbas and Prime Minister Ehud Olmert? Are they domestically really mandated to make these negotiations?
Well, I think you know the answer to that question is that all three of these leaders are in the twilight of their days, so to speak, as politicians. I think none are immensely popular in their own countries. But I think what you need to look at is the overall influence of the 19 Arab nations exert pressure not only on Israel but on the Palestinians. And the fact that the United States has at least produced it at the opening an agreement that the peace process will culminate by the end of 2008, and that the United States will be a fair broker in a sense regarding the disputes that that arise during the process. So no, there are already some hopeful signs. It's not rhetoric.
Fair enough, Mr. Shea, but there are some significant absences.
Hamas is missing, and Iran is missing, and they are certainly going to be part of the process. And you know, I think the absence of Iran is sort of like the elephant at the table nobody wants to talk about. You know, Iran is certainly very important in this process, and also so is Hamas. But you know, Hamas is inalterably opposed, I think, to the entire peace process and to the existence of Israel. And I don't think a peace process can go forward on that basis. So I'm not sure how productive it would have been to have Hamas there, even if Hamas wanted to come.
Going back to the question of credibility, if I can turn to you, Assad Abu Sharak, Dr. Assad Abu Sharak in Gaza. Can you hear me, sir? No, it seems we still don't have his voice. Viktor Nadenraevsky, questions of credibility. Mr. Mahmoud Abbas, President Mahmoud Abbas, he hasn't got a majority mandate in amongst the Palestinian people. What sort of a deal can he actually deliver?
Well, you see, it seems to me both sides, either Olmert or Abbas, they are both not are not so popular. I can agree with the previous commentator in this. That's first, and that will show in future that if any decisions will be undertaken there in the United States nowadays, these decisions will not be legitimate. But as I know, they do not plan any treaty for nowadays.
No, never mind legitimacy. Never mind legitimacy, sir. The point is it going to be practicable and workable, and will it hold?
It is not workable. Because, you see, until Hamas and Abbas are in a single branch, let's take it so, until the time they have decided how to move the process further, until that period it's impossible to have a joint position among the Palestinians. Without these positions, any treaties will be too weak.
Indeed. Joe Shea.
Any negotiations also.
Yeah. Joe Shea. Now, Hamas was asked to attend, but a series of preconditions were laid down, chief amongst those, the recognition of Israel, and of course Hamas refused to do that, and so they weren't given an invitation in the end. But there are a number of countries that are in attendance there who haven't recognized Israel, have no diplomatic ties with that country, and yet there they are. So was this really just a mechanism, a means by which to exclude Hamas?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a serious effort. I think President Bush wants to be remembered for a role in creating a Middle East peace. But I think what you need to look at is a little deeper in the background. And that is the fact that, you know, the Saudis do have some influence over Hamas, and they propose their own Arab peace initiative. That requires the recognition of the existence of Israel, but it's a land for peace solution where Israel would return the Golan Heights to, you know, to its proper owners. And I think that this peace process can help enable the Arab peace initiative, and perhaps that's its real utility.
Yes. Eric Warburg, what is the utility of Annapolis? How is it going to be used by President Bush? What does he want to get from it? And what will be seen as a success and what will be seen as a failure at the end of the short period that these 40, 50 leaders are collected up in Annapolis?
mentioned that Bush wants to have some results here. Now, I think that's a misreading. I think he wants just to have a show for some results. I think Condoleezza Rice would like some results. But Bush's whole strategy has been attack Iraq and to go to Jerusalem through Iraq. Now, that's failed completely. And as a result, he really has no interest, unlike Bill Clinton, the previous president, who did have an interest in making peace with, between Palestinians and Israel. I don't think Bush does. So I really am a bit puzzled as to why he's even holding this conference.
But isn't it, Mr. Wahlberg, isn't it the case that politicians in their twilight years or their twilight days like to leave some sort of lasting impression, and that President Bush is doing exactly what Bill Clinton tried and failed to do in 2000, and that he's collecting the genie that's out of this bottle and trying very hard to stuff it back in? But is the mechanism that he's trying to use actually an adequate one?
You asked, is it an adequate one? No, you made me think of a statement that Bush made about his legacy when asked about it. What he wanted as his legacy, he said, well, it doesn't matter, we'll all be dead, that's for history to decide. So I don't, I disagree that he has really any interest in pursuing this. Bill Clinton did in his twilight years as president, but I really don't know what goes through President Bush's mind. It's still a puzzle to me.
I have to disagree with that.
Because, go ahead, Joe Shea.
In fact, you know, the a solution to the Israeli-Palestinian issue extends itself all over the Middle East and all over the world in America's relationship with not only the Arab world but the rest of the civilized world, who are often very angry at Israel and very often angry at the United States,
things, of course,
because of our disproportionate fondness for Israel and the imbalance that may cause in our relationship with Arab nations. I think it's very important to President Bush that we restore some kind of a balance in this relationship, and I think that's partly what this conference is about, trying to demonstrate that the United States does see the need to be a more honest broker between the two sides.
Well, if I can make
a very important contribution if he manages to accomplish it.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Eric Wahlberg, please.
Go ahead. President Bush said just yesterday, I believe, that in fact he is not going to take an active role. He said, I want to just let the Palestinians and the Israelis make their own peace. Well, that's nonsense. Israel is backed very strongly by the United States and on many, many levels, and the Palestinians have really no one to turn to. So. I don't think the U.S. is making any real effort here to. You're right that it's very important. This problem has world repercussions, but the U.S. seems to have backed itself into a corner with its support of Israel and this war in Iraq.
Yes, please, Joe Shea. Israel, America has painted itself into a corner.
Make Israel the so-called honest power broker in the Middle East.
I think he misreads
that. Eric Wahlberg, just hold on, please. Yeah, go ahead, please.
I think he misreads the president's comments. What he really means is that I can't make this peace. These nations have to make that peace. And given all the issues and baggage that I would bring to the table, it's better that I hang back and allow the process to develop as best it can.
So,
Joe Shea, hundreds of able diplomats that are there to negotiate.
With respect to what you're saying, sir, why did the Americans, Europeans, and Russians decide, and the United Nations, why did they decide on such a contentious choice as Tony Blair to be their arbitrator?
Well, I think Mr. Blair is the very, very able diplomat. He is a remarkable man. He has allied with the United States in Iraq, but The fact is, I'm not sure that his heart was with the British occupation in Iraq. I believe that he's a tremendously able person who brings a great deal more than his personal history or his nation's history to the table.
Well, we'll return to this after the news. We're going to break for the news headlines in brief now. And when we return, what are the points of contention between the two sides, and what can they agree on?
Okay, I should be more like this. All right. Points of contention.
Welcome back to Four Corners. I'd just like to begin by apologizing for all the technical difficulties that we had in the first part of the show. Now, the large number of Arab leaders turning up in Annapolis must be viewed as an encouraging sign, one that bodes well for the possibility of a breakthrough. However, as this is the first such summit in 7 years, that is the first since Ehud Barak met Yasser Arafat at Camp David, it was an opportunity they were not going to spurn. Moreover, geopolitical realities have moved on a great deal since 2000. In the post-9/11 world of Afghanistan, Iraq and Lebanon, there are many new threats that they too, the Arab leaders, would like to see eliminated, elements that threaten their own security in power. A short clip after which we will renew the debate. A few of the images there about what the realities of life is like in Gaza and Palestine today. I spoke earlier with U.S. Ambassador Robert Keeley, and I asked him what the purpose of Annapolis is and what they hope to get out of it.
My view of Annapolis is not exactly optimistic, but I am hopeful. In the first place, it is taking place finally after a lot of concern about whether it would ever happen. The principals are speaking right now, President Bush, followed by Mr. Abbas and then Mr. Olmert. I can't be optimistic because I think they're limiting the agenda, at least at this point, to the Palestinian-Israeli issue. What I would hope is that they somehow broaden that to cover the whole region and bring in other neighbors of Israel and other problems such as Syria and the Golan Heights. The situation in Lebanon is disturbing. Most of all, I would hope that one of the Arab states, perhaps Saudi Arabia, would put what is known as the Arab Peace Initiative on the table. And that, to me, is a very generous offer that has great benefits for Israel in terms of full recognition by all of the neighbors, all of the Arab states, even Muslim states, open borders, trade, diplomatic relations, finally a solution to this conflict. It also has a lot for the Palestinians, that is a state with a capital in Jerusalem. And it does address the problem of the Palestinian refugees, although that would be by agreement, meaning by negotiations with Israel. It's not just a blanket approval, but it does approve their right of return, and those not returning would receive compensation. In other words, it's a very short and simple offer, but it contains a great deal of value for both sides, and I would hope that that would be put on the table at some point at this conference where the principals could consider it.
Now, you heard there from Robert Keeley, who is a former U.S. ambassador, a very experienced diplomat. We're going to cross over now to Gaza, where we're hoping to join Press TV's own correspondent, Youssef El Halou. Youssef, are you there? Hello, Youssef. Do we have a line? Seems we're not going to have much luck with Gaza tonight. Joining us once again are Eric Wahlberg in Cairo and Viktor Nadyn-Raevsky from Moscow. If I can ask you, Viktor Nadyn-Raevsky, how devalued is Annapolis by those who are absent rather than those who are present?
Well, I've misunderstood you. Don't be quick. Once more, please.
Yes, certainly, sir.
Certainly.
My question is, how devalued is Annapolis by the absence of those who are absent rather than by the presence of those who are present? Because after all, those who are present have something to gain by their presence, but those who are absent may not necessarily want to be absent.
Well, if I understand you properly, what will they gain, those who are involved into Annapolis, yes?
Yes, indeed.
You meant this? Okay. Well, as for Mr. Bush, he will win, at any rate. He has a strong team that will, at any rate, show that if there will be a kind of success, a kind of a treaty, a kind of a plan for future negotiations, then everyone will say then in administration, in newspapers and so on, that really Bush acted quite well just organizing the summit and being the host of the summit. If not, if nothing will be signed, if they'll have no plans, if it will be a failure, then it's another way. They'll tell that, you see, we tried, but the sides does not want to negotiate. Sometimes they're not ready for this. At any rate, but we tried.
Eric Wahlberg.
And again, for the Americans, they'll show that it will be okay. American public. Yes,
go ahead,
they will understand this. Well, but there are other two sides.
Yes.
As for Abbas, of course, a success will give him opportunity to strengthen his positions, at any rate, in the West Bank. As for Olmert, he tries to strengthen his position in his administration. So any side that is involved now is interested in Annapolis meeting.
Eric Wahlberg, I was actually talking about
yes?
those peripheral powers, those peripheral governments who've sent their
yes,
people
yes.
along.
Political powers.
I'm not talking about the three
as
main
for the
protagonists.
People.
What do you have to say about them? Eric Wahlberg.
Well, as for the people.
The other countries are involved. Well, for instance, Syria, I think it's very much in Syria's interest to attend it's not a conference, this meeting.
It's a meeting.
It's actually called, because Syria is out in the cold and it wants the Golan Heights to be on the agenda, and it managed to gain this. So it's even though it has to sit down at the same table with Israeli government officials, this is a small victory for Syria. As for the other Arab countries that are attending, it's not really of much value. I'm a little bit disappointed that there hasn't been more of an attempt to boycott, because I really see that it's a PR stunt for Bush and for Olmert, who are weak and really want some kind of PR victory.
Now,
and,
sir, Mr. Wahlberg,
so Syria does not give that to them.
Mr. Wahlberg,
I think that's why it's good for Syria to be there.
Mr. Wahlberg, you say that it's a publicity stunt, and there have been many commentators who have been making exactly that point. But the fact of the matter is
yes.
that Saudi Arabia is there, and Saudi Arabia was the main sponsor of the 2002 Arab League plans for peace, for a protracted peace with Israel, a permanent peace with Israel. So is there any life actually left in that proposal? And is there any likelihood that that Israel could come to terms with Resolution 242, 332 and the 1949 borders?
Well, the only way we're going to see Israel come to terms is if the U.S. Cuts off aid. And earlier it was mentioned that the U.S. doesn't really have much ability to pressure Israel. It does. As soon as it stops aiding, as soon as it joins the world community in condemning Israel, then Israel will have to wake up and face the music. But to date, it's being coddled by America and by the Zionists in America. So I don't think there's really any hope at this point
until
the U.S. does this.
Now,
Saudi Arabia, you mentioned, and its peace proposal. It's very important to keep that peace proposal alive. And S-67 borders and right of return. That's the basic position that's a just position for both sides, and it's the only peace position. So this standoff is going to go on for a long time, and it will go on until Israel wakes up and recognizes the reality.
Mr. Wahlberg, I just want to balance the argument a little bit, if I might. We did ask AIPAC, who are the pro-Israeli lobby in the United States. They're very active, very actively support Israel's role and the United States' role in supporting Israel. We did ask them to provide a spokesperson for this program, and they declined. So I just wanted to say that for the interest
of
balance.
I'm not surprised.
Mr. Nadine Raevsky, I asked how much life there is in the 2002 plan. Our colleague in Cairo doesn't seem to hold out much prospect for that being signed. But is two states, the two-state solution, is that really a solution? Can there ever really be two states living side by side when the vast majority of the people within that other state, that being Palestine, the putative Palestine, have expressed their will by voting for Hamas and rejecting the two-state solution thereby?
I don't think that without involving all the sides of Palestinian movement it is possible to solve something properly and for years. And up to now, inside the movement, the trends are differ very much. For example, this is the idea of returning of Palestinian into the occupied territories. 70% of Palestinians are eager to return. As for Israelis, 70% of Israelis are strictly against it. So it's among the relations between the two peoples, the Israelis and the Palestinians. And inside Hamas, of course, they are maximalists in everything. And besides, their position on the problem of Jerusalem, it differs much from the Abbas, who is ready, well, to make a step forward. But, of course, Hamas makes a lot of also interesting things, just speaking about Al-Aqsa. Today they were doing this, and demonstrators were just opposing the idea of giving Al-Aqsa. No one is eager to do this. And you see, the whole story of Jerusalem is the most difficult in the process, the most difficult. What is the solution? It is necessary to involve all the sides. Not only Abbas, but Hamas as well, and of course the Israelis, the three sides, maybe even more, must be on the same table. And of course it is a very difficult problem, and it was impossible to solve it for years and years. I don't think that it will be solved now. And it will stop the process.
Eric Wahlberg, how much of Annapolis is about the normalization of contact between Arab nations and Israel? Because hitherto they haven't really had anything that you could equate with a normal diplomatic life with one another. So how much of the desire of Annapolis is actually to bring these sides together into an atmosphere where they start to grow used to each other and will be willing to get down to business? Because because the precursor surely of diplomacy is that people speak with one another.
Well, that's a good point. And if we thought that Israel was serious about making peace, this would be a wonderful way of pursuing it, sitting down, talking, getting to know each other. But Egypt and Sadat's negotiations are a very good example of the fact that Israel is just not interested in making peace. Sadat was warned by his foreign ministers right from the late 70s on that Israel was not interested. Begin's first offer to Sadat was to provide a so-called Palestinian entity. It is part of a land swap giving Israel Gaza and the West Bank in exchange for a small parcel of land for the Palestinians. Now, we see this land swap being talked by Avigdor Lieberman in the Israeli cabinet today. He talks about a land swap. The idea is to rid Israel of its Palestinians. Little pockets of Palestinians would be given to some kind of Palestinian entity, and in exchange, all the settlements in the West Bank and whatever, I'm not sure exactly what Israel has in mind, but would be kept for Israel. So you see, this is going on at the very same time as Israel is supposedly negotiating with the Palestinians.
With Fatah.
We really must wake up to the fact that Israel is not interested in making peace.
Mr. Wahlberg, I'm sorry to correct you, sir. Mr. Wahlberg,
Israel... Diplomacy and sitting down and talking...
Mr. Wahlberg, do you have my voice?
I approve of it fully, but I just don't trust Israel
after
watching it for the last 20 years.
Mr. Wahlberg, Israel isn't negotiating with the Palestinians. Israel is negotiating with Fatah, I think. And there is a difference.
Yeah, but, good point.
The fact of the matter is that Mahmoud Abbas and Ehud Olmert have sat down with each other, I think, 8 times up until now in the last year, and they've come out with exactly nothing. They haven't even managed they haven't even managed to agree on the parameters of talks. These have been talks about talks, but there haven't been any talks. So what's to say that after Annapolis, heads are going to be knocked together sufficiently hard enough for there to be talks? Eric Wahlberg.
Well, yes, I don't think Annapolis will lead to any real talks. It's just another stalling stage on the way. I think Israel, it seems to me, Livni, watching what she's saying now about land swaps and making Israel Jewish only and ridding itself of Palestinians, Israeli Palestinians, and also this Annapolis, she is talking about this as the Palestinians that are living in Israel are considered as part of the Palestinians. So that eventually Israel's planning on making ethnic cleansing and who knows what. I really feel very, very worried about the future, and I don't see anything positive happening in the next while. I hate to be negative, but that's how I see the reality.
Assad Abu Sharek, I think I can can welcome you to the program finally. Welcome from Gaza. Good to hear from someone.
Thank you very much indeed.
Someone who's actually there, sir.
Thank you.
First of all, can you brief us on what the latest situation is in Gaza, and who's been taking part in the demonstrations there today?
Let me tell you something. In the Gaza Strip, the people turned out in streets in hundreds of thousands against the Annapolis meeting, and there were many conferences in Gaza and many demonstrations and many lectures against this Annapolis meeting, because this Annapolis meeting doesn't, we think, serve the Palestinian interest. It has a tacit American agenda which serves Bush locally, that is to say, for his presidential Republican elections, and probably for his agenda in the Middle East prove that he is a hero of peace, to tell the world that he is working for peace. But as a matter of fact, he is not working for peace, because it was Bush who sent a letter to Sharon to tell him that the Palestinians have no right to return, that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel forever, and the Palestinians have no right to Jerusalem, and that the settlements around Jerusalem will be there, and they will not be dismantled. And Bush is supporting Israel ever since, and the different American administration supporting Israel ever since 1948 to kill and to commit massacres against the Palestinian people, and he is not an honest broker for peace.
So, Dr. Abu Sharek, to set alongside the Balfour Declaration, we have this Bush Declaration that you're presenting for me here. Does that actually mean that President Bush is not actually going to be able to deliver anything that the Palestinian people are going to be able to accept? And can Mahmoud Abbas, in fact, present the Palestinian people with anything that they are going to accept themselves?
Let me tell you something. We have a very bitter experience with the Americans. Yes, in 2000, Yasser Arafat went to Camp David, invited by Clinton, and then they put pressure on Yasser Arafat. And when Yasser Arafat refused to relinquish our right of return and our inalienable national rights in Palestine, unfortunately, they asked the Saudi ambassador at that time, Bandar, and other Ambassador to put pressure on Yasser Arafat in order to relinquish our rights. Unfortunately, the Arabs, the Arab leaders who are, or the Arab invitees who are there, they are there as false witnesses. They are not there for the Palestine cause. They are there for their own agenda. And I don't think that this conference will materialize. What we think is that the United Nations must call for a conference supervised totally by the United Nations in order to implement all UN resolutions concerning the Palestinian question, namely UN Resolution 194, which calls for the right of return of the Palestinian people.
Now, Doctor, you've heard Prince Saud Al Faisal say in Time magazine's interview that he doesn't want a Versailles for the Middle East. If President Abbas goes ahead and negotiates anyway, irrespective of whether he has a mandate or not, with Ehud Olmert and President Bush, comes along next summer and gives this this agreement to the Palestinian people and ends up with two states rather than the older model, which was of a one-state solution within the old boundaries of the British-Palestinian mandate, with the right of return, with Jerusalem as the capital, with the final borders settled. How likely is it that that peace would hold?
Let me tell you something. At the end, there must be one state in the historic area of Palestine, in historic Palestine. There must be one state in which everybody lives in peace and harmony.
But sir,
nowadays, what the Palestinians are looking for is to implement the UN resolutions, and Israel never accepted to implement any of the resolutions, and America support Israel, and even America support Israel not to implement these resolutions. America is giving Israel every support, militarily, academically, militarily, morally, through the veto. And then America is protecting Israel, and America is encouraging Israel to build more settlements, to deny us our rights. And America, of course, cannot be an honest broker. If, to start with, there are two states, one for the Palestinians, at the area which was occupied in 1967, and then these two states will be merged into one, that is to say, one democratic state for everybody living there. This is the only solution. Otherwise, any peace other than this is not going to stick.
Yes, okay, I hear that, sir, but it's not an offer. This is a fact. Viktor Raevsky, Nadin Raevsky, this isn't on offer. The one-state solution is a very old model. It is a model that a number of countries, including perhaps the majority of Palestinians, hold with. But the rhetoric that we're hearing from the powerful countries of the world, including Russia, isn't of one state, it's of two states. Why is that?
Well, you just mean the old plans that existed many years ago, yeah? If so, there was another position from the very beginning, that was a position of a single state, just before the decision of the United Nations was undertaken. It was the position of the Soviet Union to have a single state of two nations, Palestinians and the Israelis, the Jews and the Palestinians.
Living together.
Arabs. Well, but living together in one single state, there was a very old decision, but it wasn't undertaken, as you understand. And only then the Soviet Union decided just to back the decision of division into two states. What happened later, you know, the Arab state was simply seized by the Israelis, the majority, the largest part of it. Part of it was included into Jordan and so on and so forth. And later, after 1967 and 1973 and so on and so forth, it happened so that the majority of Palestinians was not returned to the land.
Okay. All right, gentlemen.
And what is the position
we're
now?
What about
the Palestinians?
I hear you, sir. We're quickly running out of time. What I'd like to do, I'd like to take you each in turn. I'll start with you, Eric Wahlberg. Then I'll come back to you, Viktor, and finally I'll finish with our friend in Gaza. What is the best that we can expect from Annapolis and beyond? I'll start with you, Eric Wahlberg, in about 15 seconds, please.
Okay, well, I don't think there's too much to expect, but the fact that they are meeting together and they're not fighting actively, I suppose that's about as much as we can expect, and to see that continue until some change happens with the U.S.
Thank you for that. Viktor Nadenovsky, what's the best we can expect from Annapolis? In about 15 seconds, please.
Well, I don't think that we can expect anything in the solution of the future of the Palestinian people. No.
Fair enough. Thank you for that. Dr. Abu Sharikh, beyond Annapolis, what's the best thing that can happen for the Palestinian people?
Let me tell you something. This is a fiasco, and the roadmap upon which this conference, this meeting is based, is roadless and mapless. And I think the best solution is that for the United Nations to take tough resolution against Israel and impose sanctions upon Israel in order to force Israel to withdraw from the lands which occupy.
Thank you, sir. We're out of time, I'm afraid. And that was a packed four corners. I'd like to thank my guests, Eric Warburg, Asad Abu Sharikh, and Viktor Nadenovsky, and Joe Shea, who joined us by phone earlier, for sharing their views with us, and of course you for watching. Please continue sending us your thoughts, comments, and suggestions about the program to fourcorners@presstv.ir. I've been your host, Shahab Mossavat, from Tehran. Goodbye.